It's up!
Welcome to the Young Turks, Janky Granik is sparing with you guys. Look, I'm of two minds today, and we do an unusual show here, right? First of all, we do the facts, that's already unusual. And then we have commentary and analysis, and that's not always the case either. And then we have a giant range of emotions on the show. And so today will be an excellent example of that, because I'm having trouble containing my anger and disgust at what Israel is doing. And honestly, the folks who, I can't believe it, but that are still defending it to this day.
I know, it is
that's
amazing.
It's stunning. It's okay, I got you. 6 months of genocide, enough. Like, I get it, people are biased, they can't help themselves. But Jesus, guys, Jesus. Okay, so we'll get to that. But then at the bonus episode for the members, we're gonna start Operation Bliss. I mean, what a crazy topsy-turvy show we got for you today. So for the members, I'm going to start explaining how I think that we could all be a little bit happier. That's so strange, I know, but I think you guys might really like it. You might even love it. So let's try that for cooler heads, lovelier heads, blissful heads, okay. Today's topic is going to be how to choose happiness. Yeah, look, for those of you who hate that kind of stuff, go ahead and barf in the corner and then come back. But I think some of you will love it. So anyway, good day to be a member, and we need it, guys. So tyt.com/join. You can see the thermometers on tyt.com/team. You could join that way. You could hit the join button below. All right, but let's get started with the news.
Well, we do start with a devastating and infuriating story. An update on the ongoing war in Gaza. Let's do it. 7 international aid workers with the World Central Kitchen have been killed by Israeli airstrikes in Gaza. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has taken ownership of the deadly strike, but brushed it off as a mistake. But was it? I think it's important for Americans to judge for themselves, for the international community to judge for themselves, as we learn more and more details about the 3 separate airstrikes that happened back to back, which led to the killing of the 7 humanitarian aid workers coming from different countries around the world. Now, video from the scene showed some of the aid workers for the charity, which was founded by celebrity chef Jose Andres, were wearing bulletproof vests. But let's talk about how it went down. And this is according to reporting from Haaretz. So the charity says a convoy of 3 vehicles had been traveling in a conflict-free zone in 2 armored cars marked with the charity's logo. In fact, if you look at some of the footage, you'll see that one of the airstrikes hit one of the vehicles in this convoy right on top, where you can clearly see the logo for the charity. They were on their way to a humanitarian aid warehouse in central Gaza. After unloading 100 tons of aid at that warehouse, the convoy proceeded to travel back on a pre-approved route that the IDF knew about. They knew about their existence. They knew their exact coordinates. This was something that they actually coordinated with the IDF in an effort to remain safe as they're trying to deliver this humanitarian aid. Now, they claim that they gave the IDF their exact location. Sources tell Haaretz it was then when the IDF was given the order to carry out the strike against the aid workers. So here's how the convoy was hit. And you read about the details and it's just absolutely devastating. So the first vehicle in this humanitarian aid convoy was hit by a missile from an Elbit Hermes 450 drone, which is manufactured by Israelis. According to Haaretz, people can be seen emerging from that vehicle, trying to escape and get into the second vehicle in the convoy. At that point, the IDF does another drone strike to hit that vehicle. At that point, the third vehicle in the convoy attempts to save the individuals who were hit with that drone strike, or try to get those passengers into the third convoy or third vehicle in the convoy. And at that point, Israel carries out the third drone strike. All seven individuals in this convoy were killed. And if it seems unlikely that Israel would intentionally target and kill members of a humanitarian aid convoy, keep in mind that back in late November of last year, Politico actually reported this. I just want to give you a few excerpts here. The Biden administration has been providing Israel with the location of humanitarian groups in Gaza for weeks to prevent strikes against their facilities. But Israel has continued to hit such sites. The information included GPS coordinates of a number of medical facilities and information on movements of aid groups in Gaza to the Israeli government for at least a month, according to three people familiar with the communications. Still, Israel has launched operations against Hamas in or near aid sites, including hospitals, leading to the destruction of buildings and the blocking of fuel and other critical supplies. And so in this particular case, the argument that's being made by the Israeli side is, well, the IDF thought that there was an armed terrorist within that convoy.
Yeah.
Okay, so of course, there's no evidence of that at the moment. Let's go to Haaretz, where they report, according to sources acquainted with the details of the incident, the operation room in charge of securing the route identified an armed person on the truck and suspected this was a terrorist, just suspected. So let's do three drone strikes on the suspicion that there might be an armed terrorist within the convoy, which there's no proof of, by the way. By the time preparations were made for the attack, the truck arrived at the warehouse together with three World Central Kitchen vehicles carrying seven volunteers. Minutes later, the three vehicles left the warehouse without the truck on which the armed person was allegedly sighted. At some point while the convoy was traveling on the authorized route, the operations room ordered the drone operator to strike one of the vehicles. All seven volunteers were killed. And I need to give Associated Press a little bit of credit for how they frame this, because this is absolutely correct. Throughout the war, they write, Israeli forces have shown readiness to inflict widespread destruction when they believe a suspected militant is present, or when ground troops see a tactical need to strike. Homes with families sheltering inside are leveled by strikes almost daily. The military has struck ambulances and aid vehicles, saying that armed fighters were in them. So this tends to be the tactic that you hear from the IDF in regard to why they carry out these strikes, knowing full well that the strikes that they're carrying out are going to kill innocent civilians, and in this case, humanitarian aid workers.
Yeah, so if you still think that Israel is not killing civilians on purpose, you're either a giant schmuck, totally blinded by your bias, or you're an American politician bribed by AIPAC, illegally bribed, or you're a mainstream media reporter who's afraid to say things that are true. But now these days, most of the reporters are saying things that are true, because it's super obvious. And when you kill civilians on purpose, there's a name for that. It's called terrorism. And right now, Benjamin Netanyahu is easily the world's largest terrorist. So let me explain, because these are not just, insults. These are backed up by facts. So let's take this one apart. So at this, in the beginning of this conflict with Hamas, I'm such a sucker and a dupe that I might have believed Israel if they had done this on October 8th or October 17th or 27th, etc. I probably would have believed them, even though they had already murdered so many journalists and so many innocent Palestinians, like, of course, Shireen Abu Akleh assassinated one of the most prominent Palestinian journalists and an American citizen, and they shot her in the neck with a sniper with no conflict anywhere around. So Israel's been purposely murdering journalists and aid workers and Palestinians now for decades. So, but nonetheless, I probably would have been enough of a dupe to believe that this might have been an accident. But at this point, guys, number one, here they admit they knew what it was. Did you hear what Anna said? They said, oh yeah, we thought there might have been a terrorist on board. But they're not saying we didn't know that it was aid workers. We didn't know that they were delivering food. We didn't know that it was humanitarian relief for Palestinians. No, they're saying we do know that, and we knew we were murdering them, but we thought it was justified because maybe there was a terrorist on board.
I mean, just complete disregard for human life.
Like, that's it. There's no argument about it. If you're making an argument that it was an accident, no, you be more precise with your language. It was not an accident. They very, very, very clearly said, we did it on purpose. We meant to murder those people because we thought it was justified. Because if there's one Palestinian on board, they're a goddamn terrorist and will murder anyone near a Palestinian. So that's the Israeli government now. Okay, but more overwhelming evidence. Why is it my opinion even changed in the last 6 months? So where I can now say I'm absolutely certain they're doing it on purpose. Well, look at the evidence, guys. 196 humanitarian aid workers killed so far in this conflict. That is 3 times more aid workers than killed in any conflict in the same period of time. 3 times worse than the Russians, than Assad, than you name it, okay? So you're saying you have to admit that this is true. If you say that all of that was a mistake, then the IDF is the world's most incompetent military. They're just, they don't know where they're shooting at all. And oops, we killed 3 times more than the worst butcher in the whole world. We killed 3 times more aid workers. Okay, how about the journalists? 99 journalists killed. The worst in a conflict in this period of time since they started recording these numbers in 1992. Oops, we did it again. We murdered all those journalists all by accident. We killed more than Putin. We killed more journalists than Putin. Okay, and let alone all the other dictators in the world. But it was, you're asking us to believe that was all an accident. That's insanity. Let alone the 6-year-old girl. Again, Israel told the coordinates of a 6-year-old girl inside of a car. Her family's been killed already. They're saying, do not kill her, we're sending an ambulance. Israel says, go ahead, send the ambulance. You know what they do? They track the ambulance, murder the 6-year-old girl and everyone inside the ambulance. You're telling me that was a mistake? But then we saw people surrendering, white flags, no shirts, including Israeli hostages. And yesterday we shared with you Haaretz inside Israel, great reporting, pointing out, yeah, there are kill zones. And the IDF will murder anyone inside a kill zone, even if they are unarmed and civilians.
Right.
And that's why they kill their own unarmed civilians, because they're like, oh, they're inside a kill zone, murder everyone here. Oh, oops, they turned out to be Israelis. We care about their lives implicitly. You don't care about the Palestinians you've been murdering. And by the way, why is this such a giant news event? Because they killed 7 people who were largely foreigners.
From, yeah, various countries.
Because the Palestinian lives don't matter to Israelis or Americans or to these Western governments. They don't matter at all. Butcher them, 32,000. You think Israel accidentally killed 23,000 women and children? Come on, who's that stupid enough to believe that? No, I'm sorry. I know it's not mainly not stupidity at all. It's mainly deep, unwavering bias. Israel is the good guy, no matter how many people they murder. No, sorry, they're not. Right now, it's not permanent, guys, and it has nothing to do with religious background. But right now, Israel is clearly one of the worst governments in the world. They have massacred more people than almost any government. Now they're murdering civilian workers. Finally, let's get to why they did this. Why did they? I mean, this is going to draw international condemnation. There's an Australian, a Polish worker, an American, a British. All the governments are going to have to pretend to be upset with Israel, and they're sending billions of dollars and more bombs and jets. Oh, we are so mad you killed our citizens. Where's my money? Give me the APAC money. Give me the donor money. Okay, send them more weapons. Kill more. Who cares if they're Americans? Kill more, says Joe Biden. Be honest, Joe Biden's a monster. Okay, so why they do it? Because now that organization, along with several other aid organizations, have withdrawn from Gaza. So now the Palestinians will starve quicker. Mission accomplished. That's the terrorist that Benjamin Netanyahu is. Number one terrorist in the world right now.
So I want to kind of regroup, reset to talk about the victims and more importantly, the I wouldn't say more importantly, but this the reaction by our government to me is just, it doesn't do justice to the people who were killed at all. So Following news that the IDF carried out 3 separate airstrikes back to back, which killed 7 humanitarian aid workers from various countries, Benjamin Netanyahu came out and made excuses for the deadly drone strikes. And unfortunately, the United States government has provided cover for Israel. So before we get to the US government and their reaction, I want to talk a little bit about the victims here. So the victims included 1 Australian woman who's a longtime humanitarian aid worker by the name of Lal Zaumi Frankcom. 3 British nationals, a Polish man by the name of Damian Sobel, and an American-Canadian dual citizen, a Palestinian driver from Rafah, was also killed in the drone strikes. Now, in response to this, Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, came out and took ownership, saying that this happens in wartime. Does it? Does it happen in wartime?
It does if you're the leader.
Do you target humanitarian aid convoy in war and just slaughter them? Okay, well, he also continues to say, we are thoroughly looking into it, are in contact with the governments, and will do everything to ensure it does not happen again.
Total lie.
That is a lie, because this has happened. This has happened multiple times. This time, it's really, really standing out, considering the fact that these are international humanitarian aid workers. And so Israel and the way it has carried out this war on Gaza has essentially alienated Israel and the international community. This kind of situation that we're talking about right now will further alienate Israel from the global community, which is why the Israelis who have taken to the streets to demand the ouster of Benjamin Netanyahu and his far right government are doing the right thing. He has been incredibly counterproductive to Israel and the people there. Now, let's talk about the reaction from John Kirby, who held a press conference today and was asked about the intentions of the IDF in carrying out these 3 drone strikes back to back, which killed everyone in that humanitarian aid convoy. Let's watch what he had to say.
Is firing a missile at people delivering food and killing not a violation of international humanitarian law?
Well, the Israelis have already admitted that this was a mistake that they made. They're doing an investigation. They'll get to the bottom of this. Let's not get ahead of that. Your question presumes at this very early hour that it was a deliberate strike, that they knew exactly what they were hitting, that they were hitting aid workers and did it on purpose. And there's no evidence of that. I would also remind you, sir, that we continue to look at incidents as they occur. The State Department has a process in place. And to date, as you and I are speaking, they have not found any incidents where the Israelis have violated international humanitarian law. And lest you think we don't take it seriously, I can assure you that we do. We look at this in real time.
They have never violated international humanitarian law ever in the past 5 to 6 months.
I'm telling you, the State Department has looked at incidents in the past and has yet to determine that any of those incidents violate international humanitarian law.
Well, our State Department lacks any and all credibility. The Israeli government has admitted, and this is based on reporting by an Israeli publication, Haaretz, that they knew the coordinates of the humanitarian aid convoy, and that they intentionally struck the humanitarian aid convoy because they suspected that the convoy may have had 1 armed terrorist. There's been no evidence of that. It was just based on a suspicion. And they had no problem carrying out 3 separate drone strikes back to back that slaughtered 7 innocent people as they were attempting to deliver food in Gaza. Cenk.
So let's be clear, John Kirby's obituary, hopefully many, many years from now, should start with John Kirby helped to commit a genocide, helped to murder tens of thousands of Palestinians, and covered up the war crimes on behalf of Benjamin Netanyahu. He's a genocide denier. He's a genocide aider and abettor. He's a terrible, immoral human being, as is his boss, Joe Biden. I don't ever, ever want to hear anyone telling me Joe Biden is such a sweet, empathetic man.
Agreed.
No, he's empathetic to people that are in the room. And who's in the room? AIPAC's in the room, Raytheon's in the room, ExxonMobil's in the room. Every donor and lobbyist is in the room. And he has overwhelming empathy for them, as long as they bring a check for his corrupt, disgusting, vile office, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But if you're a Palestinian, he has nothing but contempt for you, and he finances your genocide. So right now, John Kirby with that outrageous, I mean, of all the things. Now, you know how Ronna McDaniel, everybody ran her out of town because, oh, I can't believe she supported the big lie of the 2020 election. True, okay, I agree with that. How about this big lie?
Well, this big lie is okay when liberal media provides cover for it. Let's keep it real, Jake. Overall, in terms of mainstream media, there is absolutely a pro-Democrat bias where you can literally have John Kirby lie to the American people with a straight face about how there's no war crimes committed by Israel when we all know they are, that there are. We have seen them, we have covered them. The international community is in agreement about the war crimes that are being committed. But no, John Kirby is a respectful human being, whereas, you know, the liars on the right wing, well, we shouldn't, you know, at all give them any fairness, any credit. Look, this is the reason why there is distrust toward the media. This is the reason why, you know, Trump supporters will not trust anything coming out of the CNNs of the world, the cable news outlets of the world, and the New York Times, Washington Post, if they're not being fair. They're just not fair. They will provide cover for Kirby for sure.
So you are 100% right. And let me double down on that in a couple of ways. Number one, imagine now if that was Trump's spokesperson, Pentagon spokesperson, and it wasn't Israel, it was Russia. And Russia had just killed 32,000 people in Ukraine, 23,000 of them women and children. Russia said, yeah, we targeted the aid workers on purpose because we thought there was a Ukrainian terrorist on board. And so we murdered them all. Oh, by the way, we target ambulances. We've destroyed every hospital in Ukraine area that we control. We've murdered 99 journalists more than any other conflict since we started tracking it in 1992. We've done all of these things, but the Trump administration says they haven't committed a single war crime. Well, everyone in media would laugh them out of the building. And they would say the big lie and outrageous and Donald Trump is owned by the Russians. And that the Russians completely control him because of money, et cetera, et cetera. You know with absolute certainty, even if you're the most hardcore Democrat, that they would say that.
Absolutely.
But you switch it to Biden and Israel, and all of a sudden, barely a peep.
100%. Now, I do want to give some of the journalists at that presser with Kirby some credit because they did ask some good questions, including whether the Biden administration would ever reconsider providing weaponry to Israel as they continue carrying out the slaughter of innocent civilians, reporters, and yes, even humanitarian aid workers. Let's watch.
So how can the U.S. continue to send military aid
military
to
assistance.
Israel without any conditions? Is there no red line that
you know, we've had this discussion, you and me, quite a bit from up here. They're still under a viable threat of Hamas. We're still going to make sure that they can defend themselves and that 7th of October doesn't happen again. That doesn't mean that it's a free pass, that we look the other way when something like this happens, or that we aren't and haven't since the beginning of the conflict urged the Israelis to be more precise, to be more careful, and quite frankly, to increase the amount of humanitarian assistance that gets in. I haven't been asked about it yet, but I expected I would be. You know, there was a discussion just yesterday with our Israeli counterparts about Rafah. Now, this one was done virtually. We expect there'll be an in-person meeting here in a week's time or so. But the whole reason to have that meeting was to talk about our concerns over a major ground operation in Rafah and to present viable alternatives for them to be more precise and more targeted.
You know, Jake, the other thing that really stands out to me about this current leadership we're experiencing here in the United States is how much the Biden administration seems to love posting their L's, right? In this case, you know, we wagged our finger at Netanyahu and said, don't be a bad boy and don't do this and that, don't invade Rafah. And then Netanyahu, without fail, goes on television and says, we're gonna invade Rafah, F off.
And you know,
that's embarrassing to the American people, okay? This is not strong leadership, it's embarrassing.
And do you know what Kirby and Biden did after Netanyahu slapped him across the face? They said, here's a free $2.5 billion gift courtesy of the American taxpayer. Please murder more Palestinians.
Yep, exactly.
And then they said, and by the way, we'll then sell you an extra $18 billion, including 50 F-35s, 2,000 pound bombs, so you can murder more Palestinians. And by the way, why are they doing this? So you can get your feelings hurt and you could call me any name in the book you like. AIPAC. AIPAC says they're gonna spend $100 million in the next election, and whoever kisses their ass more, and in their case, yes, they're theoretically getting money from American citizens. I would love to have that investigated. No one will ever investigate AIPAC in terms of Are they really getting it from American citizens, or is it foreign citizens that are also funneling in money? I don't know. I legitimately don't know. Okay, but let's assume they're American citizens. But they say we are American citizens that care about Israel, and we want America to serve Israel. You are to do whatever Israel says. I don't care if it's a left-wing government or right-wing government. Shut up and do as you're told. And Joe Biden and John Kirby and almost every other politician in Washington says, yes, sir, thank you, sir, absolutely, sir. And they bow their head. If you're going to claim that AIPAC and the $100 million that they're spending is not relevant to the politicians, please say it out loud. I'll debate any prominent figure on the left, right, or in the middle who wants to make the lunatic argument. I would love to have you on camera, on air, make the mentally deranged argument that politicians don't care about the millions of dollars that they're getting from AIPAC or AIPAC might spend against them. Go ahead, I dare you. Say it with a straight face to the American people. Lose all credibility. It isn't about just, it's definitely not about AIPAC being Jewish. It's about AIPAC being lobbyists. The same goes true for Raytheon, ExxonMobil, and Pfizer. Okay?
Yeah, it's important to really differentiate the notion of a Jewish lobby, which AIPAC is not, with a pro-Israel lobby. AIPAC is a pro-Israel lobby. In fact, many of the funders to AIPAC are evangelical Christians. So this is not about Jewish people at all. Okay.
Yeah, and it's in the name. They have Israel in the name. Another group that's associated with them, Democratic Majority for Israel. They say, we are giving you money, or we're going to spend tons of money against your opponent as long as you do as you're goddamn told and serve Israel. It's true of any country. They could get American citizens that are aligned, and they do. They just don't have quite the same amount of power that has accumulated over the years as a lot of other lobbies have accumulated power. But yes, Joe Biden doesn't mind Israel. In fact, aids, abets, finances the murder of tens of thousands of Palestinians because he gets paid to. So that's a fact. Your pretty little heart can break over it. You can call me dirty names. It doesn't change the fact that not only is that an obvious fact, everyone in America agrees with me. So maybe everybody in Washington agrees with you, and you could feel great about that. And yes, you have power and we don't, right? But it doesn't make what you're doing right. It makes you morally reprehensible. I don't want the John Kirby's and the Joe Biden's of the world to ever darken my doorstep. They are evil, deeply immoral characters, and history will write that they gleefully funded a genocide and then covered up the crime.
We're gonna take a break. When we come back, we'll switch gears entirely and talk about some domestic politics, including a Supreme Court decision out of the state of Florida involving reproductive rights and abortion bans. You do not want to miss that story. It definitely has the Biden camp smiling today because they definitely intend to use this for political purposes. I'll tell you exactly what I'm talking about and more when we come back.
Back on TYT, Cenk and Anna with you guys. Also, Tom Story, Dana Albrecht, and Bizzle. Thank you guys for joining. We appreciate you. They hit the join button below. We're trying to get to 100,000 members by the end of the year, and that'll make all the difference. It'll sustain us and get us past this storm that we're in. Benjamin Morrill, thank you for gifting a membership as usual. Anna.
Well, let's talk about Florida potentially handing Biden a massive win for the upcoming general election, especially since they continue to pursue legislation that most people are not in favor of and have punished Republicans for in the past. So the state of Florida is now free to ban abortions after 6 weeks, and that's according to a new ruling by the state Supreme Court. Now, the new law, which can now go into effect, impacts nearly all abortions at 6 weeks, which is before most women even know that they're pregnant, which is effectively a full-blown abortion ban. But the court's decision also allows for a proposed amendment that would protect abortion rights in the state, and that amendment would be put up on a ballot for the state's residents to vote on. So ultimately, Floridians will have a final say on reproductive rights in the state. But first, let's talk about the court permitting the strict abortion ban. So back in 2022, Ron DeSantis signed a 15-week abortion ban passed by the GOP-controlled state legislature, which almost which was almost immediately challenged in the courts. Then in April of 2023, just weeks before he announced that he was planning to run for president, he signed a ban after 6 weeks. Now the 15-week ban has already been enforced while the 15-week ban has been enforced while it's being challenged in the courts. The 6-week ban was written so that it would not take effect until a month after the 2022 law was upheld. So yesterday, the conservative-leaning court found 6-1 that the 15-week abortion ban enacted in 2022 was constitutional. The ruling, in response to a lawsuit brought by Planned Parenthood, the American Civil Liberties Union, and several abortion providers, will allow the six-week ban enacted last year to take effect by May 1st. The ban, by the way, does include exceptions for rape, incest, and the life of the mother. But considering the fact that Texas passed a similar law, we've seen how this has really played out. There was a woman who had complications with her pregnancy, and she was unable to get the courts in Texas to agree to allow her to get an abortion as a result, even though that pregnancy was not viable and also put her reproductive health in jeopardy. Now, Planned Parenthood and the ACLU argued that the Florida Constitution's privacy clause explicitly protects the right to abortion and should remain in force. The privacy clause in the Florida Constitution states that every natural person has the right to be left alone or let alone and free from governmental intrusion into the person's private life. The Florida Supreme Court first ruled that it applied to abortion in 1989. In 2012, voters rejected an amendment that would have exempted abortion from constitutional privacy protections. But the current Supreme Court disagreed. In the majority decision authored by Justice Jamie Grosshands, she says, "We conclude there is no such basis under the privacy clause to invalidate the statute. In doing so, we recede from our prior decisions in which, relying on reasoning the US Supreme Court has rejected, we held that the privacy clause guaranteed the right to receive an abortion through the end of the second trimester. Based on our analysis, finding no clear right to abortion embodied within the privacy clause, Planned Parenthood cannot overcome the presumption of constitutionality and is unable to demonstrate beyond a reasonable doubt that a 15-week ban is unconstitutional." So in 30 days, the ban will go into effect, but it's not just women in Florida who will be impacted by this. Florida has been one of those states where other, like, women in other surrounding red states have traveled to in order to get their reproductive rights met. But now it's going to be incredibly difficult to do so. Here's one doctor explaining the ramifications of the ban last year as it was making its way through the legislature.
A ban, a 6-week ban here in Florida means that patients from around the Southeast will have to travel potentially even further or just may not be able to access care. Every week, you know, we're seeing patients from Alabama, Georgia, Texas, Arkansas, Louisiana, who travel hundreds of miles to Florida, which is the nearest place for them often to access care, so that they can get the care that they need. So certainly the 6-week ban will be devastating here and around the Southeast.
So before we get to the ballot initiative that could actually save reproductive rights in Florida, I wanted to have you weigh in, Cenk, because look, there's the real world ramifications for human beings, for women in this case, but there are also some political ramifications for the Republican Party should this actually go through and be implemented in the state of Florida. We know that Republicans have already suffered electoral losses as a result of their stance on reproductive rights. And the Biden camp is kind of salivating over this because they see this as a way, a campaign cry essentially to get people to vote for him in Florida.
Yep. So two different issues here. One is the between the courts and the legislature in Florida, and the other is the a political issue that Anna's referring to. First of all, I don't know if you'll be surprised, but I actually don't think that the courts are wrong here. So I, you know, I'm not a conservative. I don't think that there should be. I think Roe v. Wade was great legislation and wasn't legislation, but it should have been. And so I'm as pro-choice as it gets. But they're saying, well, the Supreme Court said there's no right to privacy in this context. Well, what are they supposed to do, right? And I don't even think that that's a bad argument, to be honest. So, but that doesn't mean the legislators, what the court is saying is we're deferring to the legislators because there is no constitutional issue here. That doesn't mean the legislators have to take away your right to privacy and a right to abortion and reproductive rights and the ability to control your own body, right? They're choosing to do that. That's why they're the bad guys. So if you live in Florida and you vote for a Republican, they're gonna take away your right to choose what to do with your body. That's now a stone cold fact. It doesn't matter if you're offended by how I phrased it. It's a fact. Republicans in Florida are against women controlling their own bodies, and they will take that freedom away from you. They act as kind of a Gestapo, looking for who's pregnant, was it a miscarriage, was it an abortion? I'm gonna judge you, judge your whole life, judge how you handled the pregnancy. Did you ever smoke, did you drink, did you, etc. Then I'm gonna blame you, I'm gonna put you in jail. And I'm gonna capture your body, because I don't believe in freedom. So here we are, back in the South, okay? So that's who the Republicans are, and I understand it. Now when it gets to the politics of it, in terms of Democrats versus Republicans, well guys, we're all screwed. We're caught in the middle here. There's no one to vote for. They're all monsters. They're all, you know, work for their donors to begin with. So that's a stone cold fact. So Democrats, if you want me to lie on your behalf and say you're angels, you're not. You'll do anything a donor tells you to do, okay? Now, having said that, the Republicans, you just can't vote for them. So we're left with a choice of, do I hold my nose, my ears, my eyes, everything, and just vomit all the way through the entire process and vote for a Democrat? Or do I not vote at all? Because you can't vote Republican. Republican means, yeah, take my freedom and I now serve you. I'm your servant and you could do whatever you want with my body and then judge my whole life. I'm a woman, I don't count.
What's
so
incredible?
F the Republicans, no chance I'd ever vote for monsters like that.
What's incredible is they're still operating as though, you know, the, what was it called? The moral majority is still incredibly powerful and influential. Their own voters, Republican voters, want to keep abortion legal in the first trimester, the majority of them, right? When you pull everyone in the country, regardless of political affiliation, you know, 2/3 of Americans want to maintain reproductive rights. And that has been manifested in previous elections. The midterm election was supposed to be a red wave, and it wasn't a red wave, partly because of the backlash the Republican Party was facing due to these anti, you know, abortion laws that have passed in various states. And so, much like other red states that have taken this issue to the ballot box with a ballot initiative, I suspect that Floridians are going to strike down the possibility of a 6-week abortion ban in the state of Florida. I could be wrong, and if I'm wrong, I'll come on the show and I'll admit that I'm wrong.
They're definitely, so look, that's not the issue. The issue is whether the corrupt legislators are gonna allow ballot measures. Because remember, Florida passed a ballot measure saying that ex-felons could vote. And then the legislators were like, oh, that's inconvenient, they're voting for Democrats. We think they're voting for Democrats more than Republicans. So then they started chipping away at that.
They did, that's
ballot
true.
Measure, and they started taking away those votes, and then they started imprisoning people who voted when they thought it was legal to vote. And so legislators have done this, and this time it's almost exclusively Republicans. We're the most honest show. We rip the Democrats on a daily basis. They do horrible things all the time, mainly on the national level, but yes, sometimes on the local level too. But when it's ballot initiatives, it's almost always Republican legislators go, I don't like it. They pass an anti-corruption one in South Dakota saying you can't take lobbyist gifts anymore. They're like, well, so what? And they ripped it up and they said, we're gonna take the gifts anyway. We're Republicans, we're corrupt and we're proud. So here, they'll try to take away your votes in Florida. You're nuts to vote for a Republican, totally nuts. They're even more corrupt than the Democrats, and they hate your freedom. They want their version of religion to control everything you do in your life. Why would I vote for that? That's insanity. I'm not in your stupid, look, your religion is not stupid or smart. It's yours, it's not mine, okay? And for me to follow your rules? No, that's the exact opposite of the point of this country. It's not just about women, it's about the idea, does your interpretation, and almost always a barbaric interpretation of your religion, control all of our lives or not. And if you vote Republican, you're saying, yes, I want some random evil person to interpret the Bible and make all of us do their stupid interpretation. No deal.
So just a few details on the amendment that voters in Florida will be able to make a decision about. So the court did rule 4-3 that a proposed constitutional amendment that would guarantee the right to abortion before viability, usually around 24 weeks, could go on the November ballot. Now, how would it be written? What would it do exactly? Well, the proposed constitutional amendment that will be on the November ballot says, no law shall prohibit, penalize, delay, or restrict abortion before viability or when necessary to protect the patient's health as determined by the patient's healthcare provider. It provides for one exception that is already in the state constitution. Parents must be notified before their minor children can get an abortion. And if you're wondering, well, how do the people of Florida feel about, you know, keeping reproductive rights intact? Excuse me. To pass, keep in mind, they need, 60% of voters in November to vote in favor of that constitutional protection. According to a November University of North Florida poll, 62% of voters indicated that they would vote yes on the abortion rights ballot measure. More than half of Republican respondents, 53%, said that they would vote affirmatively. So that poll does have a margin of error of 4.37%, but honestly, the results of the poll didn't surprise me, considering you see similar trends nationally when these polls are done by other pollsters, including Gallup, Pew. You get the point.
Okay, so look, I ask Democratic voters all the time, why do you bother to go into a primary to vote for a corrupt establishment Democrat? Why do you like get out of bed to be like, oh, rah, rah, I hope that they give ExxonMobil even more subsidies? What's the goddamn point? So I ask Republican voters now. If 53% of you want reproductive freedom, then why are you all voting for Republican politicians who are universally against reproductive freedom? What's wrong with you? That's what primaries are for. Is it conceivable that a Republican that isn't more barbaric would win in a Republican primary? I don't know. You guys tell me, you're the Republicans, right? For those of you who are watching out there, is it conceivable that someone who doesn't want to take away our freedom, doesn't want to be backwards and barbaric, could win in a Republican primary? You tell me. If you keep putting these guys back in, don't tell me you're for reproductive freedom, because you're not. You vote for guys who take away that right from women. So own it. So if you voted for DeSantis and you're going to vote for him again and you're going to vote for these Republicans, you're the one who wants to take away freedom from women, and don't pretend you're not. You are.
All right, well, we've got some fire for Democrats as well when we come back from the break. It's that time of the year, that time of the election cycle, if you will, where Hillary Clinton comes out and scolds us to basically guilt trip us into voting for who she prefers.
Oh, that'll work. That'll work. Yeah. If you thought I was angry so before, yeah.
We've got that and more coming up. Don't miss it.
Back on TYT, Cenk and Anna with you guys. Insufferable Smarty Pants, whose comment we read earlier, that you lured over here, Anna, then gifted 5 memberships on YouTube. So
I did that.
Okay, God bless.
Because of me.
Well,
I'm kidding.
There's a little bit of truth to it, though. But thank you, brother. We appreciate you. Chitulu gifted 10. Tanya Dodgers gifted 1. Jules is over at 1005 gifted a membership. And Dana Albrecht, whose name I read earlier is joining, said, I've been watching since 2020, but just joined today since I know all support is much needed. That's exactly right, Dana. Thank you so much. Appreciate you. Hit the join button below or go to tyt.com/team to participate. All right, Anna.
All right. Hillary Clinton's back, unfortunately. It's that time of the election cycle where twice failed Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton comes out and chides the Democratic voters into supporting her preferred candidate in the general election. Now, she did the chiding, she did the scolding during a recent appearance on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. Let's get to how this exchange went down. It started with Jimmy Fallon saying, I mean, it's President Joe Biden versus former President Donald Trump. We know that. Clinton weighs in saying, yes, it is, it is. Fallon responds, what do you say to voters who are upset that those are the two choices? Clinton responds, get over yourself, those are the two choices. And then Fallon says, yeah, I love that. Now, of course, Hillary Clinton loves that it's those two choices, because in her mind, how could anyone even consider voting for Donald Trump? If you're a self-identified Democrat, if you're an independent, you must vote for Joe Biden. So let's get to those comments. She says, you know, it's kind of like one is old and effective and compassionate, has a heart and really cares about people. And one is old and has been charged with 91 felonies. I don't understand why this is even a hard choice, really. I don't understand it. Further, she says, but we have to go through the election and hopefully people will realize what's at stake, because it's an existential question. What kind of country we're going to have, what kind of democracy we're going to have. And people who blow that off are not paying attention. I would argue the Democratic Party is blowing that off. The Democratic Party insisted on cheerleading Joe Biden running for re-election, knowing full well that he's unpopular, knowing full well that the dude's 81 years old and looks 81 years old, or I should say older than that. I mean, it's just, if you genuinely are fearful that Trump's gonna get elected and dismantle our democracy, you would want the best possible candidate to run against Trump. But the Democratic Party didn't allow for an actual primary election. So we, by definition, do not have the best candidate to go up against Donald Trump. But we must vote for Biden anyway, because democracy is on the line. If the Democrats didn't take that seriously, why should the voters? That's what I wanna know.
Yeah. So the real problem here isn't even Hillary Clinton. Yes, she's
a huge problem.
No, she's just a great representative of the problem. And you could argue that's worse, right? Which is that she thinks that Democrats are entitled to your vote. And so get over yourself and do your duty to vote for me, vote for Joe Biden, vote for any corrupt hack that we put up here. And if you don't, it's your fault. To say that that's a bad political strategy is an overwhelming understatement, okay? If you can have overwhelming understatements, yeah. So yeah, sister, I got news for you. Nobody owes you their vote.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you lost the election. You wanna cry about it, that's okay. You wanna blame the Russians and Jill Stein, you can blame anyone you like. It was your responsibility to win that election. And the way that you win an election in a democracy, I have to talk slowly because they can't understand words that come out of someone's mouth if they're not donors.
I know, Jake.
Hillary, hold on. Hillary, you have to convince the voters to vote for you by doing things for the voters, because you are their representative. It's not that they owe you the goddamn vote because you're their boss and they should know their role. Every time you open your mouth, it sounds like you're scolding us and chiding us and telling us, wagging your finger at us, how to get over it. You better not vote for Trump. We already told you, you owe us the vote. We're entitled to it. The dumbest, dumbest, dumbest political strategy. Thank you, Hillary Clinton. If you want Democrats to win, you should not want Hillary Clinton to go anywhere near a microphone.
I mean, I totally agree with you on that. I mean, again, twice failed Democratic presidential candidate. Failed to win the primary the first time and lost to Obama. And then failed to win the general against Donald Trump. Should we really be listening to the woman who lost to Donald Trump?
Guys, I mean, that's such a great point. First of all, Barack Obama was an unknown when Hillary Clinton lost him. Okay, I mean, he was such a miraculous candidate. She blew the biggest lead there was, and then she almost lost to Bernie Sanders, lost a 50-point lead to Bernie. At least the other politicians and media liked Barack Obama. Everyone in Washington hated Bernie Sanders, and she still lost a 40-point lead to 40 to 50-point lead to him. And then she goes and loses Donald Trump, whose IQ is in the single digits. If you lose to a moron, deeply immoral guy like Donald Trump, what does that make you, Hillary? These are things you're not allowed to say in Washington. These are things that, oh, she's so, and later, oh, Jimmy Fallon, so sad, man. It's so embarrassing listening to him. He's like, I went to a Broadway play with you, Hillary, and people applauded me because I'm famous. But when you came in, oh my God, it was amazing. All of New York and all of the elites that came to the opera or whatever the hell they went or to a Broadway play, they all love you. The rich love you, Hillary. Yeah, the rich do love you, but that's not enough votes. Please, Democrats, can you get anyone who isn't awful at politics, who isn't corrupt, who isn't yelling at the voters to vote for them, and actually trying to do something for the voters? I know it's a revolutionary thought.
Yeah, I don't think that the Democrats should assume that they're entitled to any votes without actually listening to the voters. And I want to just go back to the very first quote. Let's go back to the first one, graphic two, where she compared Donald Trump to Joe Biden, saying that Joe Biden is, he's old, but he's effective and compassionate, has a heart. How do you square that circle when Biden continues giving, like rewarding Israel's slaughter of civilians in Gaza with more weaponry? Like, how do you make it make sense? I want to understand. Because look, that argument might have worked prior to Israel's war on Gaza, but it's not going to work anymore. You can't make that argument as you see tens of thousands of literal children get slaughtered by a country that we keep rewarding, that the Biden administration keeps rewarding.
Well, the difference between you and Hillary Clinton, Anna, is that you think Palestinians are human beings.
I do, 100%, yeah, I guess Hillary Clinton and her brand of Democrats don't see it that way.
They don't at all. Hillary Clinton sees 32,000 dead Palestinians, 23,000 of them are women and children. And she thinks, oh, I wish we could rush them more money to kill more Palestinians. Oh, please. Oh, and Joe Biden's so sweet. He has so much empathy for the guys committing genocide. Zero empathy for the Palestinians that they're butchering. So that's the monsters that are, okay, but I gotta read one thing from one of our YouTube members. Terry Keating writes in, the problem is we have no choice. If we don't vote for Biden, then Trump will win. WTF are we doing? Well, Terry, that's the thing. So Hillary Clinton knows that, Joe Biden knows that, Democratic Party knows that. That's why they basically holding the country hostage and saying, ha ha, our opponent is hurt. Remember, Bill Clinton convinced Donald Trump to run against Hillary Clinton. Oops. And remember, Joe Biden tried to help Donald Trump win the Republican primary because he thought he was easier to beat. Mm-hmm. So both monsters were, in a sense, brought to you by the Democratic Party. I will never vote for Trump, okay? And I don't want to aid and abet Trump. And I don't know what I'm going to do at this point. But Terry, it's for you and I to demand better, and for the Democratic Party or any party to give us one non-corrupt, non-immoral candidate. Mm-hmm. It's not too much to ask for. So in any given election, do whatever you think is right, okay? But keep demanding better from the party that you have any kind of allegiance to, because it doesn't look like they have allegiance to you.
Yeah, I will not be voting for Biden, and I don't feel bad for it. We're gonna take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the media censors over at Apple, according to Jon Stewart. Don't miss it.